Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And as we do every Tuesday morning at 7 o'clock, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in our good friend Caroline Fenton from Stillman & Company, also host of Southeastern Carolines as well. Caroline, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Doing great. How are y'all doing? Welcome back, Joe.
Joe, it's good to have you here. You there, well, Joe?
I think I just went robo.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
Okay. He's back in there.
Either robo, Joe, or muted yourself. But either one is on my Joe Rex Road bingo card.
It really is. It's a bingo card. It's a bingo card full of love here on the program. So, Caroline, Vanderbilt totally destroys Hawaii in their season opening game. 63-10, the final score. It was a rough start. They gave up a touchdown on their first drive against defensively. And then after that, they pretty much dominated from then on. What did that game and that win signal to you about Clark Lee and the direction that this football team is heading?
Well, first and foremost, to all the bettors out there who took the under, including myself, I think Clark Lee just totally dunked on us.
So yeah, he did.
That's 20 bucks that I'll never see again. But I think it's a really good sign, because you look back to Clark Lee's first year and they get stomped by ETSU in the season opener. That didn't necessarily make you feel good about what the rest of the season had in store for Vanderbilt. And we were right, you know, 2-win season for Vanderbilt last year. But I think this is a good sign. It's a good start for Vanderbilt on the season. And now my next question is, okay, what can you do next? Because Vanderbilt had a lot of success running the ball against Hawaii. And then whenever you get into the schedule against Alabama and Georgia and Florida and Kentucky and Tennessee, they're not going to let you run the ball that much. You're not going to put up 600 yards of offense against some of your SEC competitors. But I look at the over-under win total for Vanderbilt this year, and it's at 2.5. And I think if you took the over, you feel really good about that, because I think that 2.5 really hinged on the Hawaii game. And now I look at the rest of Vanderbilt's non-conference schedule. I think they're able to win 2 out of 3 of those, probably dropping that game against Wake Forest. You know, I see a win against Elon being very possible, a win against Northern Illinois. And I think that a successful season for Vanderbilt, for me, is winning 3 out of 4 of those out-of-conference games. And can you pick up at least one conference win in there? I'm looking at either Missouri or South Carolina. Can Vanderbilt beat one of those teams? I mean, their defense is absolutely improved from last year. I mean, looking at Anthony Orji, who was an absolute beast in that game against Hawaii, I think he'll continue to be throughout the rest of the season. But can they just pick up one more SEC win? And really, 4-win season for Clark Lee, I think you could look at that and say that's a success. Can they do it? I don't know. I think Mike Wright's going to have to be a little bit more dynamic in the passing game. I mean, when you put up 600 yards of offense and you don't have a single receiver with over 100 yards, that might make you a little bit concerned about what they can do in the passing game against some of these more stout defenses in the SEC. But if they can find some more success running the ball, and if they can be a little bit more successful on defense, I think that at least one SEC win isn't completely out of the question. So at least a good start for Clark Lee and company. But now what can you do against these SEC opponents? That's my next question.
Sticking with Vanderbilt, Caroline, big announcement yesterday that Vanderbilt Stadium is becoming First Bank Stadium. They sell the naming rights. It's going to be, you know, Dudley Field, of course, is how Vanderbilt fans really think of that place. So Dudley Field at First Bank Stadium. So they join Michelle's you know, Kmart special stadium.
Kroger Field.
Place is called.
It's so cool.
Yeah. There you go. That's what it is. Yeah.
Get fired up.
So I put this on Twitter to Vanderbilt fans, and definitely had a couple traditionalists who didn't like it. But I feel like it's pretty overwhelming based on just one Twitter interaction support for this thing. I think it's like Vanderbilt has to do different kinds of stuff. What's your reaction to this?
I'm totally with you, Joe. because I think Vanderbilt's in a unique position that they're not necessarily having boosters or alumni bend over backwards to dish out a ton of cash to that football program. You have to do it yourself. And while I'm a traditionalist as well, and, you know, if my football team changed Tiger Stadium to, you know, Trader Joe's Field, I'd probably be pretty upset about it because I'm a traditionalist and I look at it like, hey, I mean, LSU's got plenty of money coming in from boosters, coming in from alumni. Why do you need to break a tradition for something so sacred, you know, to get in a little bit more cash? But Vanderbilt's in a different position that they're doing everything that they can to bring money in and to continue to be competitive in college football, in the SEC. So I look at Vanderbilt and say, hey, if you can pick up money somewhere, do it. And I think it's a good thing for Vanderbilt. I totally agree with you, Joe.
Caroline Fenton on with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. So Caroline, Tennessee taking on Ball State coming up on Thursday. I mean, you're hoping, if you're a Tennessee fan, it's not an overly competitive game. But what are you most interested to see as Josh Heupel and company take the field in year two of this program coming up on Thursday?
Well, first of all, you just said it. You need to dominate Ball State. Because if you go out there and you put up 60 points against Ball State, good. That's what you're supposed to do. And that can make you feel so much better as a Tennessee fan going into that game at Pitt. But I think my biggest thing that I'm looking for is we know that that connection between Hendon Hooker and Cedric Tillman is going to be a special one. But I think my thing is if I'm a defense, I'm going to be I'm putting two men on Cedric Tillman all day, every day. What I'm looking for is what does that connection between Cedric Tillman and Jalen Hyatt look like? What does that connection between Cedric Tillman and Ramel Keaton look like? How can you spread the ball around a little bit more? Because we know this is going to be an electric offense. We know that Tennessee likes to spread the ball out. But it's also a fairly simple offense. And, you know, the more and more that defenses get film on Tennessee, the more and more it's going to be easier to say, okay, well, I'm just going to put, you know, Cedric Tillman in double coverage all day long. So how can Hendon Hooker build up more chemistry with some of these other receivers, you know, and spread the ball around so it's not just all on Cedric Tillman? Because you don't have Javonte Payton anymore. So how is Hendon Hooker going to be able to build some of the chemistry with these other receivers? That's what I'm looking for, first and foremost. Second of all, I'm looking for the defense. You're not going to have a ton of trouble stopping Ball State, but I want to see it in week one. I want to see these corners be able to keep up with these Ball State wide receivers. I want to see the pass rush putting on some pressure on the quarterback, because I think that's the biggest difference between Tennessee being a 7-win team and Tennessee being a 9-win team. You got to be more stout on defense. And of course, this Josh Heupel offense affords Tennessee the ability to not be elite on defense. They can be average on defense and still probably win a good bit of games. But if Tennessee wants to take those leaps and bounds, like I know this fan base wants it to, and how I know a lot of the national media has been hyping it up to be going into this season, you got to at least make some progress on defense. So looking to see how Hendon Hooker is able to spread the ball around to some different receivers, and also how has his defense improved in the offseason.
All right, so Foghorn Leghorn down there wants to be all secretive about his QB situation, but I know you know, Caroline. I know you know who's starting for LSU.
I know nothing. It is a steel vault down there about who is going to win this quarterback battle. But he said something very telling yesterday in his press conference. He said it's not going to be two different playbooks. You know, it's not going to be a Jaden Daniels playbook, and it's not going to be a Garrett Nussmeier playbook. We're going to have one play sheet, and it's whichever quarterback can go in and best execute that. So I think you're going to see both quarterbacks a lot. If I had to pick a quarterback right now who I think is going to start against Florida State, I lean Jaden Daniels, just because, I mean, Brian Kelly's telling you that the skill set is really not all that different, but Jaden Daniels has the advantage in the experience. I mean, Jaden Daniels has started 30 games in his college career. Garrett Nussmeier was a redshirt freshman last year. So being able to go out in the first game of the season and not have those first game jitters, at least to the amount that Garrett Nussmeier probably would have, you know, getting his first big-time collegiate start. I think that experience did not go to Jaden Daniels. But, I mean, I think you're really going to see kind of a true two-quarterback system here, which is very strange because right around the spring game, Brian Kelly said, look, I've run two-quarterback systems in the past, which he had at Notre Dame, and it didn't turn out very well. I mean, you look at the 2012 season, and Brian Kelly went 4-8 at Notre Dame running a true two-quarterback system, and he didn't want to do that, and now turns around and says, hey, we're going to have one play sheet, and two quarterbacks are going to be able to fit into it. I don't know how I feel about that necessarily, but, you know, you for sure feel good about having two solid quarterbacks that know your system, that can run the plays, that can go in there and can execute. I just worry about the consistency of this offense having two quarterbacks, and I worry about, you know, how the rest of this offense is able to get acclimated and have an identity in this offense. You know, the offensive line being able to kind of learn the ticks of the quarterback. You don't get that whenever you're constantly rotating the quarterbacks in and out. So I worry about that a little bit, but I do think that Jaden Daniels will be named the starter, but I think you're going to see both of them, not just against Florida State, but throughout the season as well.
Caroline, last thing here for you. So to that point, there are three games that jump out to me this weekend in the SEC. Georgia taking on Oregon at Mercedes-Benz Stadium, Cincinnati and Arkansas in Fayetteville, and then LSU, Florida State as well. By the way, shout out to the SEC. Two of those are neutral site games. LSU's in New Orleans and Georgia's in Atlanta. So shout out to that. It's good stuff. But of those three games, yeah, real neutral what's going on down there. But of those three, which game intrigues you the most this weekend?
That's a good question. And all three are very intriguing. I think I look to Oregon-Georgia just because Oregon has yet to name a starting quarterback. I probably would lean Bo Nix being your starting quarterback just because that offensive play caller at Oregon, he was the offensive coordinator his freshman year at Auburn. So Bo Nix is at least familiar with this offensive system. But I think it's going to be very interesting to see how this new era at Oregon starts to settle in. And also to see how Georgia is able to bridge, you know, that 2021 team to the 2022 team, losing 15 players to the draft. I think that I would expect at least a bit of a step back just because it's not easy to reload every single year. I mean, Alabama's obviously proven that they can do it, but that's the exact thing that I'm looking for at Georgia. Is it a reload year or is it a rebuild year? And I think you're going to start to see that in this game against Oregon. But you name those three games. I think the game that's really intriguing is Utah at Florida. And I would not be surprised to see Utah stomp all over Florida. And I think it's going to be kind of a rude awakening for Florida fans. I think Florida fans are going to look at Billy Napier and say, how the heck are you going to win a season opener? Utah's a damn good team. Utah's my favorite to win that conference. But I think that's going to be a really interesting game is Utah at Florida. That's going to be really tough competition for Florida right out of the gate because I see Oregon, Georgia, that's going to be a tough game, but I think Georgia's going to win that game. I see Cincinnati, Arkansas, that's going to be a tough game, but Cincinnati reloading their offensive coordinator, reloading the quarterback, and reloading six defensive players, including, you know, a first-round pick and Sauce Gardner in the cornerback position. I think Arkansas is going to win that game. Florida State LSU is interesting because you have the two head coaching situations of one is trying to kind of write his legacy at one school, and one school in Mike Norvell at Florida State is trying to keep his job. So you've got an interesting dynamic there. But I think Utah-Florida is going to be really interesting. And Billy Napier gets zero cupcake coming into his first year at Florida. So it's going to be a very rude awakening. But I think those four games are going to be interesting, but with Utah being, I think, the toughest competition of all four of them.
Well, it's awesome to have college football back. We've made it. Week one is here. Caroline, great stuff as always. Thanks for taking time to join us this morning.
Football is back. I'm ready for it. Appreciate y'all.
Absolutely. Caroline Fenton, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road, joins us every Tuesday morning at 7 o'clock. Obviously, you can catch her on Stillman and Company as well every day from 2 to 6 here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. We'll continue the discussion on college football. Tennessee taking the field on Thursday night. How bought in are Tennessee fans with the regime that Josh Heupel has put together thus far? We'll get to that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game, streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by the Law Offices of Amanda Gentry. We are live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. I got a family four-pack of tickets to give away and two unlimited ride wristbands as well to the Nashville Fair. Be caller number three, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. The Nashville Fair will be at the Nashville Fairgrounds Friday, September 9th through Sunday, September 18th. There'll be rides, agriculture, livestock, arts, competitions, and, of course, fair food. as well, including hot chicken on a stick and deep fried goo goo clusters as well. Caller number 3-615-737-1025 will win a family four pack of tickets and two unlimited ride wristbands as well to the Nashville Fair. Thanks to Caroline Fenton for joining us in the last segment. Joe, before we get into the Vols, I do want to get your thoughts on some quick breaking news in the NFL. O.J. Howard has been released from the Buffalo Bills. So you talk about a guy that I was pretty sure was going to make it in the NFL. It's been a struggle for O.J. Howard thus far in his career. Has not quite lived up to what I thought he would be.
Oh, I thought he was going to be a star in the NFL. So, but look, it's been pretty consistently disappointing from him. And you know, this even happens to former Alabama players. It's surprising because I feel like he has all the tools.
Yeah, it's mystifying to me with how good he was in college and just the physical tools that he brings to the table. Just kind of how unproductive and underwhelming he's been thus far in his career. But we'll see where O.J. Howard lands now that he has been released by the Buffalo Bills in training camp. Joe, the Vols taking the field coming up on Thursday against Ball State. Josh Heupel speaking yesterday. He's excited, ready to go. Feels like his football team is ready to play against Ball State coming up on Thursday. And my question for Tennessee fans is, how bought in are you to Josh Heupel and the program that he's building up in Tennessee? There seems to be a pretty good demand for tickets. The students seem to be pretty excited. You know, they go 7-6 last year, so it's not like they lit the world on fire from a record perspective, but I think it's pretty clear they were better than most people thought they would be a year ago. With expectations and this offense heading into year two, how bought in are Tennessee fans? I think it's an interesting question, and the sense I get, Joe, is people are pretty bought in to Josh Heupel and company heading into year two. Now, I don't think that too many Tennessee fans are talking about, you know, winning an SEC title or anything this year, but Josh Heupel from both on the field, where I think there were a lot of encouraging signs last year, but also in recruiting, things are going really, really well for this Tennessee football program right now, and we'll see how that translates to the field starting on Thursday night against Ball State.
Yeah. I'm having some issues here. That is without question. So I missed most of that. But as far as buy-in,
yeah,
if I'm coming through right now,
you are.
Yeah, I would hope that Vols fans like is there a little bit more reluctance each time, because I think they should be bought into liking what they're seeing. But I feel like there's this urge to go immediately, like put the pedal on the floor, and when is Atlanta happening, right? Whereas when each time you have to do this with a coaching change, it makes it a little bit harder to come back. Now, granted, if you find an incredible coach, Alabama went through all those years, and then, I mean, by year two, Saban had things rolling.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you find that coach, okay, then it can snap your fingers and come back, but I feel like Vols fans so badly want each of these coaches to be that coach. And I think you should just kind of enjoy like good success early. And also a guy who's not just a total freakazoid, who's just a total wacko personality. Like that's one thing I like about Heupel. I feel like he's got the right demeanor to handle that entire situation. There are a lot of big crazy fan bases out there, big pressure schools, money, tradition, and there's a lot that goes with it. I don't know that there's a job exactly like Tennessee out there.
Well, from Heupel, and look, I'm basing it on 1 year of body of work so far. So I'm always careful and hesitant before you commit too much one way or the other. But it feels like to me, just from watching Heupel on the field, but also listening to him and the way that he talks, There's a symmetry, a connection there between system and on the field competence that I just feel really good about with him. Like, it feels like he knows what he's doing out there. The system, I think, is a modern offensive football system, as opposed to that last year of Jeremy Pruitt ball, where it's like they were playing back in 1968. I mean, it was unbelievable. Like the dramatic difference in not only the production, but just the way the offense looked from Pruitt's last year to Heupel's first year is unbelievable. Like, I don't know that I've ever seen anything quite like it. So that combination of the system that he's running, but also like the game day competence. Like, he's not perfect out there. He makes mistakes. You know, there were some clock management issues that I had a problem with last year with Heupel at different times. But for the most part, we talked about this with Vanderbilt the other day. It felt like they knew what they were doing out there. Like, every time Tennessee takes the field with Josh Heupel, it feels like they know what they're doing. Like, they've got a plan. And I'm not saying that plan's always going to work, and there are going to be times this year where they're outmatched and, you know, they're going to lose some games. But I feel really, really good about Heupel from that perspective of, he's got a plan. It looks like he knows what he's doing. And game day, I thought he was really good last year in terms of adjustments and everything that goes with it. So the early returns on Heupel to me are really, really good. Now, how do you handle a little bit of expectation this year if you're that team with the offense that we think they're going to have?
Yeah, well, I agree with all that. You know, Caroline brings up an interesting point last segment, and I think it's valid and fair. This system, defense is getting more accustomed to it and all that. I mean, one thing Alex Golish told me in the offseason was, like, he looks at it differently. For any team that's actually played against them, he looks at that matchup differently, because you can't prepare by film. You can try to copy and practice, but it's not the same. But I gotta say, I just feel like Heupel's also, well, and remember, Golish is the play caller, but Heupel, Golish, it's a partnership, and I feel like they're just really good at devising plans, play calling, setting things up. And I don't think it's going to be this thing where all of a sudden they get figured out and, sorry, guys. You know, you're still going to have those three and outs that the drive lasted 7 seconds.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you look up at the end of the game, your defense is on the field for 42 minutes. I mean, there's some drawbacks to this, but, I mean, for the most part, I think you're going to overwhelm teams that don't have your talent level, and it gives you a chance, you know, to hang at times with teams that are at a much higher level. And look, if things keep going the way they are, but you got to stack and stack and stack, and you got to hang in there and keep having success. A few years from now, that talent gap should be closed a bit.
Bellevue Billy on the text line says, Tennessee could be coached by a sack of bricks and Vol fans would still be bought in before week one. This is from Bellevue Billy on the text line.
Yes, Billy.
A sack of bricks.
They want to believe, Billy. That might be a little bit much.
A sack of bricks. Bo from Murfreesboro on the text line says, what most are overlooking, in my opinion, Tennessee's offense is predicated on a solid running game. They throw the ball a lot, but successfully moving the ball on the ground is what makes that offense go. It's pretty easy to see that if you look at Heupel's offenses wherever he's been. If they can run the ball, they'll score a ton of points. It's coming from Bo from Murfreesboro.
No, that's a good point. Look, I mean, they absolutely love balance, and it's tough on a defense when you've got the goods to run the football to go with the tempo, right? I mean, how many big runs last year happened because of a defense not being aligned? I mean, Missouri was like, they had like seven guys on the field. I don't know what the hell was happening in that game, but it was just like, touchdown for Jamari Ball, hey, touchdown for Tyon Evans, yay! I mean, like, it's a problem when you can run the ball, and they absolutely, I think you're right that people don't talk about that enough.
We'll continue the conversation on the Vols. Got a couple more of your thoughts to get to on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. We'll also get to some very interesting news in the NFL yesterday as well. All that ahead. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, The Game. Tune in for Nashville Sounds Baseball tonight at 7:05 on 94.9 The Fan. The Sounds are at home at First Horizon Park, taking on the Memphis Redbirds, the AAA affiliate of the St. Louis Cardinals. Sounds Baseball on 94.9 The Fan, presented by 312 Pizza and Farm Bureau Health Plans. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063 The Game. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. We'll have the Rob Rant coming up at 7:45. Looking forward to that. Got something that's irking me, and I'm ready to get it off my chest. So looking forward to that going up here in just a few minutes. Right now I'm talking Vols. So, Joe, Josh Heupel did speak yesterday. Brew McCoy, as we talked about yesterday on the show, is eligible and ready to go. And I thought it was interesting. He said, you know, Heupel doesn't offer up a lot in his press conference. One thing he was raving about Brew McCoy yesterday and said, yeah, you're going to see him run around the field a lot on the field coming up on Thursday. Like, it feels like Josh Heupel is pretty excited about Brew McCoy and what he's going to bring to this offense. We know about Cedric Tillman, and there's been a lot of off-season chatter about Jalin Hyatt, and I think they're going to use more receivers this year than they did a year ago. I think they feel pretty good about their receiving room. But Heupel sounds like he's fired up about Brew McCoy and what he can bring to the table for this team.
Yeah, and I think that's also a little bit of a reflection on the young guys who aren't quite ready yet,
yep.
You know. I mean, think about last year, early in the season, I still remember, you know, the Bowling Green game, the Pittsburgh game. It's like, wow, Cedric Tillman? Oh, there's Cedric Tillman again. It took a while, and then you finally realize, yeah, man, like, that guy's legit now. But how many big plays did Javonte Payton and Velus Jones also have? And, you know, as Tillman kind of became clear wide receiver one, those guys also did a lot. And, you know, of course, it was like Jalin Hyatt wasn't ready last year or didn't transition well to the offense. And it just shapes up to me like, with McCoy active, they feel like it's that trio that's really going to get a bulk of the work. Tillman, Hyatt, McCoy. And I think you're still going to see some Callaway sprinkled in, some Squirrel White maybe sprinkled in here and there. Try to get some guys a ball. But
Keaton sprinkled in a little bit too, yeah.
What's that?
Ramel Keaton sprinkled in a little bit too, yeah.
Yeah, it's good to have a veteran like him. But, that offense is it's like you want depth, you figure. Like, it makes sense that you'd want depth because it's like, man, running that tempo and you just ran a go route and now you're busting your butt back and you got to run another. Like, but – also the speed that it goes and the precision required. Like, how many receivers do you realistically trust in a given season? And if the same guys are getting all the reps, like, those guys, you want them to play a dominant number of snaps. So, like, in the Pittsburgh game, I bet you those three guys, like, you know, Thursday night, we're going to see a bunch of people.
Yeah.
We're going to see Joe Milton. And, yes, we already have jokes in the text line about 1.5 is the over-under on his overthrows. Thank you. I think that was JC. But like the Pittsburgh game, I bet you those three receivers are dominant in terms of their presence on the field. And that's a heck of a physical tandem on the outside with McCoy and Tillman, with Hyatt in the slot. McCoy and Tillman are like, they look like linebackers playing receiver.
Yeah, I mean, they're really physical guys. I mean, Tillman's huge, and, you know, he's always had the size, and last year he put it together. I mean, I legitimately thought in the first half of that Purdue game in the Music City Bowl, I was like, Cedric Tillman is going to have about 575 yards receiving in this game, and he was really, really good. I've got high expectations for him heading in this year. I'm interested to see. He's hyping up Brew McCoy, so I'm interested to see what he looks like coming up on Thursday in that game against Ball State. We are just a couple of days away now from Tennessee kicking things off on Thursday night at Neyland Stadium. Joe, some interesting news yesterday in the NFL. We've talked a lot about Jimmy Garoppolo and where he was going to end up this offseason, and looks like he's staying put. The 49ers and Jimmy Garoppolo reworking his contract yesterday, and they restructured it to a one-year contract that's worth $6.5 million in fully guaranteed base salary. And basically, what this means is it's got playtime bonuses in there that could boost up another $9 million or so for a total of $16 million. But it's going to give him freedom the next year, and he can explore unrestricted free agency in 2023. So it appears that John Lynch and the 49ers not able to find a deal for anyone to take Jimmy Garoppolo. So now they have restructured his contract, and he is going to be the backup quarterback, and he will be in San Francisco this year. Looks like there's a no trade and a no tag clause as well. So he's going to be there. He's going to be the backup quarterback. And now, well, I guess he's going to be an unrestricted free agent next year. We'll see what happens on the Jimmy G front. But I thought a really interesting development there. They've gone from trying to trade him to now, I guess, giving up on that. And he's going to be the backup quarterback to Trey Lance this year.
Yeah, as our Niners writer David Lombardi at The Athletic pointed out, there's a no trade, but that doesn't mean that, you know, it basically means that they're gonna have to work together on something, you know. So basically, you know, he's gonna obviously have a say in going somewhere or not, but Lombardi expects him to continue to pursue a trade. And look, I mean, Jimmy G, you know, the market for him wasn't what some people thought. I guess I'm a bit surprised too. I figured he'd be somewhere. It's not the worst thing for the Niners. You can make this work. A lot of people would love to have a backup quarterback of that quality. And this is a team that could go to the Super Bowl. So it won't necessarily be derailed if you do have a Trey Lance injury. And look, there's also the chance that Trey Lance isn't as good as they think. I mean, we still have to figure that out.
Yeah, I mean, he had some flashes in the preseason where he's got a huge arm. I think they're going to try to go vertical in that offense a little bit more with Trey Lance than they did with Jimmy G. But the fact of the matter is, and we were, you know, I heard some people talking about this yesterday, Jimmy G is still a good quarterback. Now, he's not elite, and I think there are questions as to whether or not you can win a Super Bowl with him, but he has gotten to a Super Bowl, probably should have won that Super Bowl, and he got to an NFC title game last year with him as the quarterback. Now, I think Kyle Shanahan is a great coach. I think he's really good at what he does. The running game with him, with not even really having elite running backs, he is an unbelievable play designer, and he gets that running game going. So I think they're in great shape with Kyle Shanahan as long as he's the head coach. But like Jimmy G is still a decent to good quarterback in this league, so I'm surprised that nothing happened. I do wonder, number one, the price tag, but number two, coming off the shoulder surgery, how much hesitation there was there from teams around the league. But it seems like he's healthy and he's good to go. So, you know, things can change quickly. You know, somebody might get hurt in week one and maybe you're dealing with a different situation. I do wonder, though, like if you're Trey Lance, does it bother you at all that he's still kind of there in the background as the former starting quarterback? And I wonder how he views that heading into this year.
I'd say if Trey Lance and Jimmy G truly have this great relationship that they always talked about, like that all quarterbacks talk about, then it shouldn't bother them at all. I mean, they've made it clear. They've made it clear they chose him. They invested all these picks in getting him. They've made it clear they didn't want Jimmy G around anymore. And now they're like, well, all right, we'll keep you around. I mean, if Trey Lance is bothered by that, then I worry about Trey Lance, you know, being a successful starter in this league.
Do we think that Jimmy G has come into contact with any of his coaches in the last 2 weeks? Like, has he talked to people in the front office? Because that was a problem, apparently, at one point. Got his new deal and just went MIA.
He's ghosting them.
Yeah.
Just muted and blocked everybody. I mean, the thing is, like, that story, it's kind of like this Kyler Murray thing, which is just a fertile ground for jokes. But it's also like, I mean, it is going to be really interesting to see what that does. For him, to him, them, that relates. I feel like that story about Jimmy G is really damaging. And it should be. If he really did that, I mean, if I'm a GM out there, I'm like, well, first of all, he's already kind of a fringe talent and he throws bad picks and they've won a lot of games with him being okay. Yeah. And then he does crap like that. Nah, I'm good. I mean, that had to be a factor, I think. In the lack of interest.
Well, I think there's a good chance that it was. I'm really interested to see how this plays out. Is he ultimately moved this year, or is he just going to sit there as the backup all year long and kind of bide his time until free agency? We'll see what happens on the Jimmy G front. Coming up next, it's time for the Rob Rant, our rant of the day. Looking forward to your participation as well on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, The Game.
The time is now for the Rex Rant.
Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
On Robbie and Rex Road, here on ESPN, 1025 The Game, and the Game Nashville app. I know you're beautiful, only you so
And it is that time of the day, time for the Rex Rant here on Robbie and Rex Road, our daily rants at 7:45. I am hijacking it today. It is not the Rex Rant. It is Rob Rant today. Looking forward to that. Joe, I think I've gone down a similar rabbit hole before as it relates to the world of adult league softball. But I'm going to go down that rabbit hole again. I was playing last week, and it is interesting. So as a pitcher in high school, you used to kind of just feel like if things were going poorly and you're getting shelled out there, that you're like directly responsible for losing the game. It's really not that way in softball. All I'm doing is lobbing that thing up there, and you know they're crushing the ball left and right. You're supposed to hit it, so I don't really feel bad about it all that much. And we're out there last week, and you know our team's decent. We've got some good players, but the team that we were playing against, they got some people that like to play in tournaments and on the weekends and all that stuff. And I don't have time for all that nonsense, so congratulations to those who do. But these people are very good at softball, and they were destroying us last week, which is fine. I used to get upset about those things. I don't really care anymore. But I'm out there on the mound, and the score is like, I don't know, it's like 17-8. I mean, we're just getting crushed in the game. And there's this one guy, he gets up there, and this is every time he gets up to bat, which, by the way, he got up to bat a lot. He probably hit about, you know, 15 times in the two games that we were up there because they were just crushing the ball left and right. And the people that think that they're like Nomar Garcia Parra before they get in the box, where they've got to, you hold time for the umpire, you're kicking dirt left and right, you put one foot in the box, you're putting your batting gloves on, taking them off, putting them back on, finally stepping in the box, taking two practice swings and getting in there, and all of a sudden a minute and 25 seconds have gone by and you're finally ready to hit the ball. At one point, I'm standing on the mound, and I'm just looking at him like, hey, get in the box. What are you doing? Why is this some sort of like vacation you're taking every time before you get in the box? Just step in there. It's no different from like the guy that shows up for pickup basketball and you've got the socks pulled up to the knees, the headbands on. You've got to go through like six rounds of stretching before you get out there. Either get in there and get ready to play or don't. But these people who think that they're like professional athletes getting in there ready to play these pickup sports drive me nuts. And softball, I think, might be the worst. Like, there have been, like, Facebook videos made of softball guy, and there's different ways you can go about doing this thing. But the ability to just get in the batter's box and get ready to hit, I don't know why this has to be, like, some Broadway production in there. Get in the box, get in your batting stance, and get ready to hit the ball that's coming in at approximately 17 miles an hour. That is my rant for the day. It's not that difficult.
Oh, man, that's a good one. Yeah. You know, look, there's some softball players who, like, they have their same routine, I guess. That's what someone would probably say. Well, it's like the routine I had all through growing up in baseball. And so I go, but you know what? It's like, man, you just get it. It's freaking softball. Come on.
Like, why do you have to kick dirt? Like, you're kicking dirt left and right. I know you're trying to get yourself as your cleats in there and get as gripped up as you can get. But every time before you step in the box, you got to kick some dirt around. Just step in the box, man.
Now, I will push back on you a little bit. I'm totally with you in general on the, you know, I've probably been that guy.
Yes, Joe, so, in basketball. Yeah.
But on the one thing about basketball I will push back on is if I don't stretch like a mother, you know, that groin is getting pulled on the first time I go get a rebound. So, you know, like, yeah, look, yeah, like,
I don't mind stretching, but like stop and play. By the way, let me stretch out this quad real quick while you're in the middle of the fast break. Let me call time. Just get in there, man. Get in there and play or don't.
Yeah. I mean, but that's, you know, older people, you gotta think about stuff like that. The stuff you're talking about in the box, and I think you're right that like the professional softball players, some of it just gets so serious. And look, I'm blown away by how good some people are at softball. But then sometimes I'm like, God, why do you want to be that good at softball? Like, I love softball. I miss playing softball. It's fun.
Yeah.
But like, dude, if you're that good at softball, like, are you sure that it's worth the time that you spent to get that good?
It is unbelievable to me. And look, I'm not trying to throw shade. If this is something that you do, more power to you. I don't know how people have time to do it, but there are people that are grown adults that go play in softball tournaments around the country every weekend. Like a couple of the guys that we were playing against last week, they were getting swings in. They played like five times that week, and they were playing against us to get some swings in because they were going that weekend to play in a tournament in Panama City, Florida. And I'm just like, how do you all have time and or money to do all this all the time? To just be 33 years old and flying around the country playing softball. Like I'm not mad at you. Good for you. I don't get it. I don't know how you have time to do it.
Ryan from Chicago, aka Michelle's boyfriend.
Oh gosh.
Says Rex Show throwing shit at Rex Show talking about the pickup guy with sweatbands and tube socks. I don't have either one of those things, by the way.
You just wish you had
them. I
dropped
dimes to you, Ryan. How many laughs did you get off my dimes, Ryan? You know, that hurts, man. You know, this also brings up another thing, Robbie. My brother-in-law played college soccer at George Mason. He's like a all rocked up workout dude, okay? Yeah. Love the guy. But he playing these flag football leagues just a few years ago and got like his jaw broken. He had to have like facial reconstruction. Like it was like, dude, it is not worth it. Like this flag football with grown men beating the crap out of each other.
Like
you know?
When Joe there's that. Threw a pass off my forehead.
There was that.
I was trying to, you know.
He no looked me. He tried to Magic Johnson it. I was not ready for that.
I mean, apparently it was a good pass. Went on target.
The dimes are going to drop, you know. You just got to be ready for them.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like there's always you can find them in every sport, though. Like there's the rec league hockey player where you know it's not supposed to be any contact whatsoever, and they're out there like throwing their shoulder into you when you're on the board. You're like, dude, I will take this stick and hit you over the back of the head with it. I will go to jail for this. Stop. You know, the softball I feel like is probably the worst, although – you know, there's the pickup basketball guy that always takes it too far too. You can find him in anything. I just feel like the softball player that thinks that he's, you know, Ted Williams or Mike Trout out there stepping in the box and taking 15 minutes to go hit the ball. When it's one pitch, you're lofting it up there. You should be, I mean, these guys can put it wherever they want to put it anyway. Right field, left field, over the fence, doesn't matter. Just get in the box and hit it. That's all I'm asking for.
I think it's a totally fair request. I mean, it's kind of funny. Like if I was there watching, I would find it to be funny. But if I was you on the mound, it would get annoying very quickly.
Yeah. I got a texter that says, I grew up in Newark, New Jersey, and the softball scene in New York, New Jersey, and Philadelphia in the late 90s, early 2000s was just absolutely insane. There were a team of guys that were 6'5" and bigger, roided out of their minds and playing in this weekly tournaments to make six figures a year playing softball. It's insane. And as a baseball guy, I'd come over there and I attempted it one weekend and I literally just walked off the field. There's no rhyme or reason to the game. You just have some monster to hit a home run. They didn't even have to run anymore. And then you have to a pitcher with a suicide wish because one line drive up the middle and he's dead. That's the other thing. Like the only thing I'm worried about up there on the mound is like, please don't hit this back at my face. Please don't hit this back at my face. And I will say, I do feel better about playing like the really good teams then because they have a little bit more control over where they put it. But I will tell you, there have been a few times when I'm pitching that I've just gotten absolutely smoked out there with a line drive back up the middle. It's not fun.
Six figures a year playing softball?
Oh, yeah, man. Some people, it's all they do. Like they just play in tournaments all the time. Softball tournaments.
Do we miss our calling?
Oh, we're not good enough.
I mean, if I knew that, poured everything into it. My goodness.
Keith on the text line says, have you ever driven through Franklin on a Saturday morning? It's like there are 50 Lance Armstrongs out there in the Tour de Franklin. it's Franklin, Williamson County, like the cyclist capital of Tennessee.
There's a lot of biking. There's a lot of biking that goes on. No doubt about that. Big E just says fake bean him with the softball.
Maybe
just,
so.
Just come with a
high heater.
Come with the speed. Yeah, with a rise ball up to the chin.
If I could throw a rise ball, maybe something I'd try to do at some point. Viking Matt on the text line says, "What's wrong with sacrificing a live chicken before every game?" See, you know, people take things seriously. People are out there. I feel like softball, I think, is the worst. I think it's the worst in terms of this sort of behavior, from what I've seen. adult league softball.
Yeah, it's incredible how good people get at it, how serious they get. But again, I didn't realize you could make that kind of money. I'm like rethinking my entire life now.
Chad from Chattanooga on the text line says, nothing worse than, quote, baseball guys not good enough to make the baseball team in their full uniform playing college intramural softball. I couldn't eye roll emoji hard enough. This is coming from Chad from Chattanooga on the text line. I feel like we've hit a spot here on the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com.
See, some of us in college played on a softball team called Lev's Patch, named after a patch of hair on my buddy's back, and had the ass outfield. We just had fun.
A legendary story here on Robbie and Rex Show. This has been the Rob Rant. You can check it out every morning at 7:45 here on the program. We'll be back to our regularly scheduled Rex Rant tomorrow at 7:45 as well. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Teresa Walker from the Associated Press. We'll get her thoughts on the Titans. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.